It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena. Mayor Phil Goff, how are you this morning?
Tamariae, Rachel. I'm good, thank you. Yeah, had a busy few days, but a good weekend. Watched the Warriors win and the All Blacks win. I thought, we're on the up and up.
Definitely was nice to see the Sky Tower lit up in the Warriors' colours yesterday, I have to say.
Yeah, that was great. I noticed that coming in first thing in the morning. I think they turned it off at about just before 7, but it was looking pretty spectacular. And it was good. You know, you had a full crowd both at Eden Park and at Mount Smart, and the fans at both matches were given something to cheer about. So hopefully that's a bit uplifting for everyone. You know, we won't talk about the black caps and cricket and that sort of thing. But no, that was good. And, you know, good to see life coming back around the city. That's looking really, really good as well. But still some way to go.
Well, last week we had a chat ahead of a very significant vote that was happening on council just a few days ago now. And this was around the intensification of housing in Tāmaki Makaurau, and also particularly looking at some of the conflicts with special character areas and some of the, I guess you could say, cultural and perhaps value-based conflicts that we're seeing come through this as well. The voting has been done now. It was 11 hours. That's a really long session. Yeah. What came out of this?
Essentially, the recommendations we began with came through through the vote. There was only the vote that was taken was actually on a reasonably marginal point. What the government legislation does, it basically says everything can be developed up to, within particular walkable catchments from city centres, metropolitan centres, transport hubs, up to a level of at least 6 storeys, unless there is an exception. And the government sets out its own exceptions, you know, if it's a natural hazard area or something like that, it's a floodplain, that's obvious. And council's given a very limited discretion, and the discretion that's most controversial, I guess, is over what's called special character. Now, special character isn't the same as heritage, but it's an area that has an overwhelming majority of houses that have a particular quality that might merit their preservation. And what we're largely, I mean, what most people think about is the old turn of the century villas that you see in Devonport, that you see in Ponsonby and St Mary's
major concern, I guess, well, one of the major concerns has been that we're seeing a lot of the special character protection around these central suburbs, which are also the more affluent suburbs at the moment and areas that people would like to live in. We're seeing not necessarily a lot of movement to allow people into those spaces. So what was actually the outcome of the day?
Basically, a move to try to expand the definition of special character failed narrowly, and what we're going to do is about 3/4 of the properties that were defined as special character areas will have some degree of protection against unlimited height. But if you put that in context, that's about 3% of the entire housing stock in Auckland, 3%. And some of that will be reduced further.
We have talked about this before, though. It is 3% in a very particular area, though, that people would like to live in the centre of town. So, the scale is perhaps somewhat blown out there.
Let's get realistic about this. The areas that you're talking about are not going to be areas of affordable housing. They're all high-value property costs.
But that's because there's single units on one large piece of land.
No. Whatever happens on that land in those areas, if they bowl the old houses, the new houses that they'll build will be expensive, high-quality houses. So we're not talking about dealing with the affordable housing problem. What we should, if you look at the affordable housing problem, the latest figures just came out for May for building consents. They are the highest ever on record. 17% above last year, well over 21,000. We are now getting to the point where the construction of housing is exceeding the growth in population. And just talking to some real estate agents the other day, they're saying they're also getting to the point where rents, which have been going up, not as fast as property prices, obviously, but still going up, they are now saying that rents are coming down and property prices are coming down. We've got more supply to meet the demand, and of course, factors like interest rates and the punitive measures that stop people speculating on property, like the bright line test, are stopping that speculation. So we are getting those houses built. But it comes back, the argument basically, Rachel, was this between two groups of people. There are strongly divided opinions, and both sides have got an element of truth in what they're saying. Some are saying that...
What happens next? Because I guess we're coming back to the same point again. Yep. There are two very strong positions on this, and this has perhaps come to some sort of middle ground. It's not necessarily given much on either side, but I don't think either side is particularly happy with the outcome. So what exactly is the next thing that happens? Where do we go from here?
Well, it is very much a middle ground. So you're trying to protect the best of your quality while allowing for a maximum amount of intensification in areas that count. Let me just make one other point about that. In areas where light rail is going to go through and where the city rail link is going through, those are areas where the need for intensification far outweigh the protection of the special character areas. So you'll see along the light rail corridor and around the city rail link, much higher intensification. You know, I would think around the transit-oriented developments, you'll see very high rise, way above the six stories. And the important thing about that is it needs to be intensification done well. So while people are living up in the sky, there needs to be enough open green space around there.
Okay, is that where we're seeing the conversation heading now? Is making sure that where we see intensification happening, which is absolutely necessary, we're going to be seeing also livable areas as well.
Yeah. Well, look, make no doubt about the intensification. I talked about the consents before. 77% of those consents are for multi-unit dwellings, terrace housing and apartments, as against standalone housing. So intensification is happening. The focus that I have, and I hope the future council has, is to try to make sure that that intensification is of a reasonable quality. And my worry is less around this bloody big debate we're having around special character areas than the 3x3s that you're going to build along under the government legislation, a long way from any public transport, where there's no open space on the section, there's no room for greenery, no room for the kids to play, and they run the length of the section and not up and down the road. So you'll have one group of three houses joined together in one section, looking into another row next to it, and that won't necessarily make for good urban design.
We've heard some conversation about potential of getting a government architect or a similar sort of body involved in this. Is that something you would like to see to make sure that we do perhaps get these spaces done correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, when the legislation was going through Parliament, and I and Chris Darby, chair of the planning committee, made submissions on it, we pleaded with the select committee, for God's sake, get a group of people together, get a group of developers that are known to do intensification well, like Ockham, get the city planners, get the people from central government agencies, and work out the minimum design standards that you need so that these new houses not only provide accommodation but stand the test of time as being decent houses to live in. And that was my plea. We made some progress, but largely we were push back on it, and I think that's a big mistake.
Okay, well, I just want to end on a positive note, something that's cool to see, because we've been talking about this for, you know, as long as I've been doing this show. This is the Cody Dieback situation in the Waitakere's. We have heard some positive news about the heart of the Waitakere's not necessarily being affected by the pathogen. This is really great. How do we make sure we keep this safe?
Yeah. So the study was the first proper study done. The previous study said, well, we've got this much Cory dieback because we've done an aerial photo and it shows that these trees are dying. Not all the trees were dying, of course, of Cory dieback. Some of it was stress related to drought, etc. But we've done the proper soil sampling now. So we've found that in the Waitakere ranges, there is about 10% of the soils that are affected by Phytophthora, which is the disease that causes Cory dieback, and about 16% of the trees were affected by Cory dieback, but they were around the periphery, not in the heart of the Waitakere ranges. They bear a relationship with proximity to pathways, which shows that I think that council was right to be precautionary. They also show a proximity to where the soil has been disturbed by past milling. There is some suggestion that Phytophthora has been around for a very long time, you know, like 150 years, but there has been spreading of that. And what the study showed was that council was doing the right thing and being precautionary, because, you know, basically, when you've got a pathogen, which in this case is slow moving, the way that you control it is by the first principles of infectious disease control: isolation, hygiene, and treatment. So we are doing that. I was going to use the term "we're not out of the woods yet." It might not be appropriate. Look, there is still a problem with it, but it is. It is more regionalised than we thought. The important thing is we don't want this pathogen spread to other areas like the Hunuas, which doesn't yet have it. So, you know, those stations there where you've got to sanitise your boots, keep to the paths, improve the paths so you don't have the mud that carries the pathogen, all of those things are still relevant. But hopefully this is good news, that we've got a chance to control this and we're not going to lose the iconic species that kauri are.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Goff. Have a great week and we'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Always a pleasure, Rachel. Thank you very much.
Ka kite.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank you.